I feel my mission as a leader is to unlock other people's potential. Yeah. Because I had teachers and people that saw in me something I didn't see in myself. They were a mirror for me, helped mm-hmm. me be more self-aware, more confident in my skills. Yeah. And now I'm completely committed to unlocking the potential in other people. You learn differently. Great. Let's talk about it. What makes you tick? And I find if you invest a little bit of time and energy at the more personal level to deeply understand what they learn or how they learn differently, you unlock their potential. They will be the best version of themselves and the rest will follow.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of the CEO Podcast. I am live here at Natural Products Expo West with my friend, former teammate, yes. Abigail Buckwalter. Welcome.
Hi. Pleasure to be here. Thanks so much. Great to see you.
We are stoked to have you. Abigail is the CEO for the Nestle Health Science Division. And for those of you who don't know, which I'm sure you do if you're listening to this podcast, Noon joined that family. Actually, it's 2021.
I know.
Time is flying. It actually doesn't feel like that long ago.
And it's such an important part of the fam now. So well done.
I am stoked. I'm stoked you're here. Really, really stoked you're here. So I thought maybe one thing would be interesting to get to know each other is what if we did two truths and a lie?
I'm here for it. Yeah, let's
all
do
right.
it.
So you really got to sell this thing okay. because you're trying to not let me get what the truth is. But that's okay. You got this.
Wait, what the lie is?
Or what the lie is.
Yeah, okay. You're switching it up.
Two truths and a lie. I'm trying to guess the lie. You're right. Thank you. You should host this.
It's okay. All right. So I got to think about something that you couldn't have Googled. All right. Ready?
Yep.
Okay. The first one.
Yep.
My mother was a naval intelligence officer and spy.
Okay.
Growing up, I wore an eye patch and had a pirate persona.
For sure.
And since I've taken on the CEO role, I've also taken on breakdancing to relieve the stress.
Okay. Like, it seems like I should say mom wasn't in the Naval Academy, but I'm like, no, she was, because you're going to pull off those traits from her. So I think that's true. I think... what was our second one again? Our second one was...
I wore an eye patch.
Oh, an eye patch. That's the lie. That's the lie, because... I don't know if you're a pirate. That's why.
Well, you're wrong. Mm. I couldn't break dance if my life depended on it, although I aspire to do that because I feel like it would be really good for me to get the kind of energy out. No, it's absolutely true. I grew up wearing an eye patch, which was led to maybe some resilience and some kind of overcoming aspects of my personality, but I have a degenerative eye disease. So I wore an eye patch,
okay. And
this is way before... you know, companies figured out how to make it cool. So it was like nude. And then I put a proper pirate eye patch kind of thing on top of it. And then to overcome all of the chaos associated with being, you know, judged and being made fun of, I owned it. And I created this pirate persona called Short Eye Eagle. And what I used to do, we moved around a lot. So I had to kind of constantly reinvent myself and go through that inundation of being judged to the first round, like, being asked all these questions, and kids can be cruel a little
bit. Totally.
So to own it and build up my confidence in those kind of settings, I created the Short Eye Eagle persona. I used to challenge other kids to play I Spy with my little eye, which took on a whole new meaning
totally. When
you have one eye.
Yeah.
And I got really good at it. And then, you know, I'd start to build up my confidence by challenging them.
Were you bullied?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's not? But yeah. Absolutely. When you look different, you're an easy target.
Yeah.
And mine was very visible.
Yeah.
Right?
Did it shake your confidence?
Absolutely. In the beginning.
Yeah.
And I think, but it also led to a lot of resilience and perspective. I think at a young age to overcome and getting a lot of tools and trips and tactics along the way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Being mentally tough, not easy as a kid.
No, I wouldn't think so. And I think you're right. All kids, I guess, at some point has been bullied, but obviously this is going to be a little more over-indexed what's happening to you. So that's tough, but really cool that you owned it.
Yeah.
That's
and to
brave.
This day, I have a friend of mine painted a portrait of Short Eye Eagle, that persona, and I have it hanging over my desk as a reminder. Yeah.
Love it.
It's pretty cool.
Talk to me about your mom.
She was a naval intelligence officer. She did two tours in Vietnam, was based in San Diego, and really just had kind of a wild journey to serve in the country, but also fit in a lot of lifestyle along the way. Mm-hmm. Ended up being a, you know, scuba diver in Guam, where she would go and kind of deactivate bombs and things and then help treat soldiers and people during the day with the bends that would come up. Being a girl that grew up in Iowa, that allowed her to see the world. So like many people, signed up for different reasons and then ended up infiltrating some underground stuff and ended up getting some naval accommodation for it.
Do you scuba dive?
I don't. I wish I did. No. When I lived in Australia, that was one of my goals. Yeah. It's still actually a goal of mine.
Yeah.
Never got around to it, though. I was deep into snorkeling for a while, but I never did like all of the tests to qualify.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yes, but so, wow, that was, I really stumbled, and here's why I stumbled. Yes, I scuba dive. Yes, I'm certified. I was about to say I'm not good, and I don't think if anyone's ever really said that before, I'm not good at scuba diving, but here's the thing, I'm actually not good at scuba diving. Why?
Like you don't know how to, the mechanics of it, or?
I can't get my heart rate down.
Well, that's an important thing to
And therefore
manage.
I'm consuming too much oxygen. Yeah. Therefore I got to come back up to the surface too soon. I just need to get more comfortable with water. I've always had this fear of the water. It's a weird thing about me. By the way, I face my fears. That's another thing. So if I have a fear of it, why would I go certify to get scuba diving?
Because
I'm weird.
Into it, yeah.
And two, you know, my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, I really wanted to impress her because she was a scuba diver. So I did it for that reason.
Totally. My dad did the same thing.
He did the same
with
thing.
With my mom, yeah.
It's like, oh, I better do this thing. Yeah. And then I've done Ironman, right? So that's a 2.5 mile swim in the ocean.
Yeah.
So I will face my fears, but I'm not good in the water. So it's interesting you said, do you? And I'm like, I do, but not well. So does it count?
It does count.
Okay.
It absolutely counts.
All right.
Don't try to diminish it. It counts. Give yourself some credit.
On it. So talking about bullying, I have a relatable story for me in that. So when I was a kid growing up in Canada, like every kid in Canada, they want to be a hockey player.
Naturally. Yeah.
I was one of those. And I didn't actually start playing ice hockey until the age of nine, because I had a single mom who couldn't afford to get me to play hockey. So I had the opportunity to play hockey. Basically, the community rallied and said, let's get Kevin into hockey.
That's amazing.
By the way, that also means I was like 4 to 5 years later than everybody else. So at the end of that year of playing my first year of hockey, I won this award and it was the most improved player. The best player on the team came up to me at the award ceremony and says, way to go, dude. You won. Of course you won, though. You suck so bad. Mm. So here I felt so good for a moment. Yeah. I will say there is a happy ending to this. So at 9 years old, fast forward 7 years later, I'm now playing among the highest level of hockey players at the age of 16. And he is no longer playing. And we worked in a grocery store part-time in high school. And he comes up to me and he's like, hey, Kevin, do you remember what I said to you when we were kids at a hockey award ceremony? And I said, yes.
I bet you never forgot.
I didn't. I'm saying it now. Yeah. I didn't forget. And I said, yes, I remember. And he actually was embarrassed. He's like, oh, God. And then he said, you're so damn good now. I wish I had stuck with it. And that's what he said. But yeah. I can relate to it. The point was like, how do you, like, there was actually a moment where I was super proud I won this award. I knew I wasn't good. Like, I was getting better than what I was, but I was still, like, so far behind.
But progress over perfection any day.
Yeah.
That's the way I see
it. But kids can be tough.
Totally.
That's kind of the point.
And I always think about, like, what's your intent in what you're saying? And I think oftentimes people don't, bullies in particular, they don't think about the intent. So you have to either assign it to them or keep it moving. But when you don't have perspective at that age, who does at nine? You don't have enough life experience to be able to compartmentalize those things. So it can really stick with you.
I like that. I like that. Assign it to them.
Yeah.
Can you actually just double click on that? What you mean by that?
Well, I think with time and age, and even me growing up, we talked about a little bit of the physical bullying, but I looked different and I learned different. I also had a learning disability. So I had to kind of really get creative and compartmentalize certain things and really double click, to use your word, on the intent of things, whether it be the math problem that presented to me one way, like a straight up equation, I could understand perfectly. But when it was a word problem doing the same thing, I was completely lost. And it really forced through a lot of focused teachers that invested and tried to unlock my potential, helped me learn about things.
Okay.
It helped me give perspective to assign things to problems. And ultimately, sometimes people can be problems or the way they present themselves to you. Yeah. So I like to think about it like almost going through that math problem in my head. Like, yeah. What's happening right now?
Yeah.
And I don't like to project on people, but sometimes to keep it moving, you need to get an instant dose of perspective mm-hmm. and really understand what was the intent mm-hmm. and what do you mean? And then reflect on it in a healthy, more productive, positive mm. way.
So when you think about those attributes and challenges that you're working through, and maybe anything else that help in your formative years become the leader and the human that you are today.
Yeah.
Like, what are those? What are those things that you're like, this is how I became yeah. Abigail?
Well, I think some of what we discussed, like the eye patch to the learning disability, and even moving around a lot as a kid, having to reinvent yourself. Oh, yeah. Gave me so much resilience and I didn't even appreciate it probably until my adulthood where I went back and thanked my parents for all of those kind of at the time that seemed like grueling, yeah. cruel experiences mm-hmm. that actually helped forge me through fire. So resilience was a big one that I still kind of rely on today. I'm originally from Iowa. Not a lot to do there all the time. So creativity was another one. Mm-hmm. I found ways to keep myself busy and use my imagination. I used to come up like the pirate story, as I mentioned, the yeah. short eye eagle. I tapped into like a higher power of imagination, sometimes to survive something,
yeah.
but sometimes to fill space. And I became a great storyteller. And through that process, I started to get more and more creative through positive feedback and trying on new different things.
Yeah.
And storytelling as a leader today is so incredibly important.
Oh my gosh.
Clear, effective mm-hmm. communication rallies people behind a cause, mm-hmm. brings them along on the journey, and helps you get from A to B yep. in the most effective, efficient, passion-driven way. So yep. the power of storytelling. But growing up, I told a lot of stories. And now I've turned that into kind of a skill as a leader.
So on a scale of like 1 to 10, extrovert, introvert, extrovert being 10.
I'm a trained extrovert.
Trained?
Yeah, I still need to recharge my batteries.
Okay.
Like being at Expo West, where we are right now, yeah. Is one of those moments where I need to recharge a little bit to yep. kind of bring the full fuel, bring my best self. It doesn't always come naturally to me.
Even after all those times moving, like, because you had, like you said, to reinvent, now I've got to find new friends. And
yeah, I mean, it certainly helped. And it also helped me gain perspective on things, I guess, building on some other stuff that we talked about. But certainly, I think quiet moments are just as important to me as the connections that you make. Mm-hmm. And having it holistically, the best is the combination of the two for me. That's what works best. I get a lot of energy from talking to people like you, learning from people like you. That's a little bit of my curiosity. Mm. I can always take something away. And mm-hmm. I'm a forever student of my craft. I think you are too. That's totally. Probably why we connect. Going back to your original question is like that curiosity, like be a lifelong learner. My parents taught me that. You can always connect dots and connect with people and really add value. And that's what I love to do. But last, I'd say certainly not least to the question that you asked, because I looked different with the eye patch and I learned differently, I feel my mission as a leader is to unlock other people's potential. Yeah. Because I had teachers and people that saw in me something I didn't see in myself. They were a mirror for me, helped mm-hmm. me be more self-aware, more confident in my skills. Yeah. And now I'm completely committed to unlocking the potential in other people. You learn differently. Great. Let's talk about it. What makes you tick? And I find if you invest a little bit of time and energy at the more personal level to deeply understand what they learn or how they learn differently, you unlock their potential. They will be the best version of themselves and the rest will follow. So
there we go. Because I was thinking to myself, how do you unlock that? Like, what do you, is there a method, a framework that you kind of go into this to try to unlock that? And maybe let's just build on that for a second. Is that the same for your leadership team as it is for I'm meeting with, you know, a middle level manager, yeah. if you will?
It doesn't work for everyone. It works for me. I make it personal. Get to know you. And honestly, mm-hmm. the answer is not a really robust framework. It's something really simple. I listen mm-hmm. and I'm very present. Mm-hmm. When you have me, you have all of me. Mm-hmm. And then you can pull from that broader perspective that I talked about to start to connect the dots, unlock doors, or maybe better understand how that person kind of ticks through observing mm-hmm. them, listening to their story in their own words, mm-hmm. and then sometimes reflecting it back to them to help kind of build bridges or whatever it may be that you're trying to accomplish. So it's pretty simple. It's a framework of being an active listener, actually caring,
yeah.
And really meaning it, and then being consistent. I think that helps.
I feel like we've known each other for a long time right now. Because
I've wanted to know you a long time, so I'm happy this is happening.
Ditto. Yeah. Here's why I'm saying I'm going. Am I like in your mind right now? Because I kid you not. One of the things that I've said, the number one career advice I could give to anybody, it was the second part you said after listening.
Yeah.
And it was the caring.
Yeah.
And what I say to anybody, I go, you want one piece of career advice? Just one. And if you walk away with this, your likelihood of success is going to go up. And it comes down to care a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't mean your work has to be your whole world, but you must care a lot.
Absolutely.
Care about the person, care about the task, care about what I'm doing, care about the impact, care.
So one of my mantras, my team knows this, or anyone that's ever met me knows this, is like, you have to be bold in your vision, but never compromise care. And it's a really simple equation.
Yeah.
And if you do that, it works.
Yeah.
And you feel good about it. You sleep well at night. It's a North Star, and it's very simple. We can all do it. We can all control it. And it's something, it's like a renewable resource, you know?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
It never runs out.
I love that. Bold vision and never compromise on care. Okay.
That's what I mean. Keep it personal. Yeah. Listen, pay attention, connect the dots.
I love it. Yeah. Truly. Cool. Love it. Love it. Love it. Okay. So we're in this crazy time. There's a saying that I once heard, and it's actually quite a while ago, and I think it actually is more applicable today than ever before. As fast as the world is moving today, it will never be this slow again.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm talking about is change, right? There's so much change happening, and at such a rapid pace.
Yeah.
How do you manage through that? Or said differently, how do you manage the team and the team culture to manage through the change?
Yeah, it's
Nestle Health Science is going through tons
absolutely.
Of change.
I mean, if we're not changing, we're not relevant, right?
I agree with
you
that
have
too.
To continue to mm-hmm. evolve, but therefore you also have to keep it simple. So when I think about that, I think about the world we're in, you know, economically and then very personally and certainly at the team level. We have a few guiding principles that we live by, and they're very simple by design because they, in theory, I'd love to say that if my team, any one of them was interviewed, if they had a minute or a dollar, that they would know where to spend it because we're hyper aligned on the following things. Our guiding principles are people first, always.
Okay.
Because if you don't take care of the people, the performance will never come.
Mm-hmm.
It's irrelevant.
Yep.
Clear, aligned strategic priorities.
Yep.
What's our rallying cry? What's our why? What's our purpose? It should be simple, strategic, mm-hmm. and aligned. And last but not least is execute with excellence.
Mm-hmm.
So putting people first, clear, aligned strategic priorities,
yep.
and then executing with excellence. And if you do those things, and you apply your own personal touch throughout at the team level, so everyone feels a part of the broader three guiding principles, like they'll still feel individual, it'll still feel personal, but we're all aligned to a higher purpose.
Absolutely. One of the things that's coming through, and you talk about listening, that comes from an empathetic point of view. I also can appreciate that. I've definitely been recognized by people that I've worked with as an empathetic leader.
Yeah.
However, I don't actually think that's common, right? It might be common sense, but it's not common
sure.
practice.
Yeah. Easier said than done.
Right. And so when you look at other C-suite team members, whether it's your team or people in other organizations of C-suite where we're not seeing that empathy, like what advice for them would you have to help them bring that in to make them, I call it more of a complete leader.
Sure. Look, if it doesn't come naturally to you, don't force it. I'm not saying outsource it, but then build your team around that. Be self-aware,
mm-hmm.
know yourself, yeah. know that that's not a strength of yours, but appreciate and understand that it must be core to a high-performing team if people want to follow you. So then round it out. Bring the right people in. Balance yourself out with somebody that can bring that empathy, that compassion, and do it in an authentic way.
Yeah.
The worst thing for me is to force it and fake it. If yeah. it doesn't come to you, own it, but still appreciate the importance that it brings to a team and to culture.
I like it. Like, so the saying of fake it till you make it.
Or fake it till you feel it sometimes. I don't know.
So fake it till you make it actually yeah. doesn't really work is basically yeah. what we're saying.
Yeah.
Right?
But at that level, at the C-suite level, you have to be self-aware enough to recognize that.
Yeah.
And people will appreciate you owning it authentically,
mm-hmm.
but then balance it out. Bring in the right people. You know, outsource the things to other team members where that's their real authentic strength.
Yeah.
And leverage it and own it and talk about it. And I think that the rest will follow.
Where are your strengths and what do you surround yourself with to make up for that, to make that whole?
So I think a strength of mine is that I diversified my experience kind of early in my career. I said yes to a lot of things, which meant I got an instant dose of perspective, probably wise beyond my years, failed a lot. I mean, a lot, learned from it very quickly, and then was able to connect dots later and kind of leapfrog in certain areas. So that resiliency, I think, is a strength, that perspective. I really work a lot on my mindset. So my ability to zoom in and zoom out, and I'll be totally honest with you, I think being a parent of three children has been the best preparation for being a CEO.
Why?
Because I talk about listening earlier, but wow, do you learn very quickly the importance of listening, knowing when to lead and when to be led, how to always create a safe and secure environment, but also be their GPS system. Kind of don't do the work for them, but help them navigate and maybe course correct along the way. Teaches you how to deal with unpredictable situations almost on the daily, as well as, you know, trying to be the calm in the storms and just bring that perspective, but to people that are so dependent on you. It's the ultimate form of care. So that's really helped me kind of be as prepared as possible. But I think other strengths, again, I mentioned, like the curiosity, the compassion as a priority, and then really clear, consistent communication and doing the hard things first are definitely up there.
But if you actually think of some of those failures, is there one that you would say, here's a failure that happened to me? Would you be willing to be specific on something and you go, and this is how it shaped me?
You know, I mean, a little bit cliche, but there was a lot of times where I didn't ask for help soon enough. And I was so afraid to fail that I created more mistakes than I would have had I not just kind of failed fast and learned from it. I think I was obsessed with the outcome, and as a result, didn't bring people along on the journey. I learned those lessons really quickly, and luckily I intend to never repeat them. But there's been probably a few instances like that. Other ones, I mean, I can think of so many.
Do you think that comes from, there's a book out by Dr. Michael Gervais, and it's The First Rule of Mastery, but what the subtitle's actually where I'm going is Fear of People's Opinions. And I'm wondering if fear of people's opinions, would that be what might have prevented you from asking for help?
Probably. I mean, I think I always felt I had a few things, perceived things working against me. I was always young in strong or senior leadership positions. I was a woman, many times in my career operating in in foreign countries. So I felt like I had to overcome all of these cultural norms assigned to me. And as a result, I kind of lost my authenticity a little bit, as opposed to kind of owning the situation. And I think I cared too much about what other people thought about me. I don't think I felt at the time I had earned the right to be authentic.
Yeah.
I felt I needed to prescribe to something, or frankly, I didn't want the attention on those things. So I kind of conformed a little bit, and that was sort of the worst thing I could have done.
That's interesting. The conforming. I'm guilty too. So I'm asking the question to just get to the you as a human and understand that, because I think people can really resonate with that and learn from it. And I agree. I think I can be guilty of conforming because I want to make sure, maybe I want to fit in.
Yeah.
Maybe I want to belong.
I'm guilty of that too. Or sometimes I do it to like get it over with. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like
that's a good one too.
The path of least resistance is just to kind of comply.
Yeah.
It takes energy to stand out, to exhibit courage, or to demonstrate a different way of thinking.
That's a really good point. I agree with you completely. Yeah. I'm thinking about, as we sit here and, you know, you in the CEO role, I was in the CEO role at both Noon and at a prior company, Mrs. Meyer's Clean Day. And actually, when I think coming back into my first time being CEO, the thing I didn't realize was I knew it would be the most important. I didn't think it would be the most predominant part of my job. And my job was about making sure people, back to your point of unlocking, believing in themselves, believing in what we're doing. In some ways, you're campaigning, and I mean that in a positive sense. Like, I need to keep you guys focused on what we're doing. And that is, like, job number one.
Yeah.
Didn't expect that going into a CEO role, I think, to that magnitude.
Absolutely.
Do you have any advice to, whether it's existing CEOs, or there are many listening to the podcast that are aspiring to get to this position or this level? yeah, what's keeping you awake at night, if it's connected to that or not?
Sure. So I have the honor to run a large organization. And as a result of that, I feel personally accountable for the people. And I think it starts and ends with the people. Mm. So I said that if I keep saying it, it's because it matters. Clear people skills, taking care of the people, clear priorities that are articulated such that people can go and opt in or opt out. I think as CEOs today in the ever-present world with AI and a million different things coming at us, we have to stay relevant, which means even if you have acute problems today, you need to address them. Mm. You need to empower your team through the people first to make sure they're on top of it. And you have to keep your eyes on the future, which means you got to keep hustling no matter how scaled you are as a business. You got to read the things, meet with the people externally, stay relevant so that your business, your brands, and your people have a future, and you have to keep that inspiring vision alive in everything you do through the clear communication, through the people first approach, and mostly for having that vision that people want to rally behind. Whether you like it or not, as a CEO, you set the tone.
Yes.
So set the right tone.
I agree with that. You really do set the tone. You know, when I think about team culture at the end of the day, it starts with the leader, but it doesn't end there. Because everybody has to own it.
Absolutely.
Everybody has to own it.
And it has to be nourished. It has to be a way of working, not like a PowerPoint slide.
No, I agree. It is absolutely the... There's actually a book called The Intangibles.
Yes.
Do you know that one?
I was just talking to somebody about it. I haven't read it.
Okay. Joan... forgot Joan's last name. She's the author. It's following the San Francisco Giants back when they won the World Series. I love it because I now have ingrained in my head something that she said. Team chemistry, I think team culture, team chemistry is the amplifier of talent.
I love that.
Right? So you need really good talent. Here's the deal. You don't have to be all A-plus players, but if you have B-plus, A-minus players, which is still really good, and then you have a magnifier, right, in terms of the chemistry, right, so it's going to amplify it, you now have A players.
Absolutely. Like that's,
it will bring everybody along. So I'm just obsessed with team chemistry and team culture, which I know you are too,
but yeah.
It's all about people. So speaking of people, we're walking around the floor here on Netro Products Expo. There's a lot of brand. Actually, so many times I'm like, gosh, I hope they all succeed. There's so many of them.
I know. I'm rooting for you out
too.
There.
Me too. I am so with you. I'm rooting for you. When you look at all these companies looking to grow, whether it's acquired or just sustained success, because I actually think that's a mistake to think for all companies to think the one way to go is an exit.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, it's a path.
Couldn't agree more.
It could go a different path. What are the ones that are today, like, who's getting it? Like, why are they getting it right? Maybe it's not different from where it was before. And who are the ones and what are they doing where they're getting it wrong? Like, you're missing the point, people. What are you seeing out there?
So I think to be successful, whether it's you're chasing an exit or to just make a connection at Expo West, whatever it may be, keep it simple. I know that sounds really... really oversaid and done, but that's the magic. There's a lot of magic in simplicity. And I think people sometimes try to break through innovative things that have never been done. Sometimes being brilliant at the basics is the most effective way to make a deal, form a partnership, whatever it may be. So I want somebody who has the what's in it for me in mind. And their memo is so compelling that I want to read the full novel. You know, so get me with the hook, have that insight. So I'd say keep it simple, creativity, but with a little bit of constraint, you know, so much so that you're brilliant at the basics, and then be super authentic, because when at that level, like, you connect with the people. So surround yourself by the right people, with the right people, be truly authentic to your purpose. It will shine through. And for the right partnership to work, you have to connect on that. You talked about chemistry before. Get it right from the start. Don't assume it will come later. You know, you got to feel it and you got to nourish it. And whether that's like the interview process, I've always felt like take the time to get it right. It will pay dividends later. Be authentic about what you're really chasing. What are your expectations? What are your standards? For each other and for yourself.
Yeah.
You want people that want to rally around that, whether it's they're hiring, you know, to be part of your company, or is it an entrepreneurial partnership? And then finally, speaking of partnerships, be open. There's not a one-size-fits-all approach, especially today. There's so many different ways to partner.
Yep.
So be open-minded to that. You never know when the right time might hit for maybe a unique arrangement that you never thought of before. But if you put yourself out there and kind of have this growth mindset, it will find you. So think about different ways to partner that maybe are fit for purpose.
Yeah,
that's a what's in it for me kind of approach.
Right.
If you understand that I have a lot of corporate red tape or whatever it may be, find something that's a little bit easier to digest.
I keep thinking about something you talked about earlier, and I need to unravel this a little more.
Let's do it. Unpack it.
Because you talk about, I work on my mindset, right? Like, yeah. That's really important to you. I think there's a lot of people talking about wanting to do that. And I'm curious about how you do that. So as an example, I've heard many times it's lonely at the top, whether a CEO or any C-suite. It's like, who do I go to? Because there's no one above other than board of directors. So where do you go? How do you get help? And how do you manage and build that mindset, that strength, that resilience?
Yeah. As I've, I guess, climbed in my career and matured, it's become much more about quality over quantity. You have to have your hype people. You have to have those trusted resources. And sometimes I go to people outside of my realm. I actually don't want them to know the nuts and bolts of the day to day, because that's not necessarily what I need, whether it be to vent or have reassurance, somebody who kind of helps give me an instant dose of perspective. It is lonely sometimes. I try to avoid before it gets lonely to kind of preempt that by having my hype people. It could be my hype people. It could be my hype song, whatever it would be to build yourself back up to kind of remember that at the end of the day, this is a blessing, and you're here by choice, and you can choose to make an impact and to not dwell too much, but also not take the situation for granted. And having people that get you and nourishing those relationships, whether they be peer mentors, external people, your spouse, your dog, whatever it like works for you. And when I start to feel that, I do a few things. To your point, I'll come back to mindset. I run it out. For me, that's therapeutic, but I've learned and I've become obsessed. Sometimes I can't fit in the physical aspect of taking care of myself as much as I should. So I absolutely, and every person has time to work on their mindset. I fundamentally believe the mind fails before the body, whether you're an athlete, a leader, whatever.
That's a great
point. You have to work on your mindset. And as I said earlier, growth mindset is a renewable resource. And every day you can get better at it and massage that muscle. But it's easy to get low. You're under pressure. You're under a microscope. So be self-aware enough to figure out what lifts you up and then tap into that. And that takes a lot of strength. It takes a lot of courage to ask for help or to reach out. But you have to do it because it can be lonely.
Absolutely.
But most importantly, there's a lot of pressure. And if you're an accountable person like I am, sometimes it's self-inflicted. You got to shake that off sometimes and find whatever it is that will pull you out and give you that dose of perspective. Like, this is just a season. It might be a challenging season. It too will pass. And what's it going to take for you to get through it quicker?
Do you have... I don't mean it literally, if you haven't heard this, but a personal board of advisors, meaning here's my personal board of advisors, has nothing to do with work specifically, but it's you as a human.
I've really worked on creating that. And I wish I would have done it sooner. I wish I would have gotten that advice sooner because it's powerful. And even if you only tap into it when you need it, then over time you start to realize, well, it's better if I tap into this when I don't need it, because then there are these builds. But yeah, I'm starting to build that community.
That's great.
And I'm never going to look back. Everyone should do that.
Totally true. And that's the thing is, on that personal board of advisors, right, is you need some that are the rocket boost, get you going. You actually need some that are going to call it like it is.
Absolutely.
And keep you honest.
You need the diversity of the board. It can't just be the people that echo what you think you want to hear. They need to tell you what you need to hear, even if you don't want it.
100%. Let's think an adjacent to that is leaders or mentors that have helped shape you, guide you, and help you get to where you are. Who are they?
Luckily, I was born into it. My parents. Honestly, my father and my mother both have committed their careers to the well-being of others. A lot of service-led leadership there. They taught me from an early age about the significance, the responsibility, and the importance of authenticity and being true to yourself even when it's hard. My father is a physician, a philosopher, a teacher, and he taught me the importance of like learning from books and others, leadership experience, and from Winston Churchill to, you know, a variety of people. Like, what can you learn from the past to help guide the future? And he has dedicated his career to improving outcomes and transforming people's lives. My mother, now you know, is a veteran. She is a mental health advocate. She has been an innovator in the mental health space for the elderly. And so I learned early on about the importance for advocating for people that maybe don't have a voice. Mm. And that concept I said earlier about being bold in your vision, but never compromising care, yep. I learned from her. So I have them both to thank for not only my personal beliefs and value systems and never compromising on them. And it's absolutely translated into my leadership style.
It's shining through.
Yeah. Well,
it's shining through.
I was lucky to have them.
Fortunate, lucky, because you're born into it.
Yeah.
But you've absorbed it and yeah, you've just become such a wonderful yeah. person and leader.
And what they do though, it's that, I mean, we both totally jive on this. It's the putting people first, like sounds so easy, but it's not always easy in mm-hmm. practice, whether it be you're trying to create new standards or you're advocating for yep. changes in, you know, the legal system, whatever it may be, or even with your own children or yourself.
You have three tiny humans.
I do.
Under that influence of yours, what are you doing to teach them in the realm and mindset of leadership and taking control of their lives and confidence?
Role modeling. I mean, my husband and I are partners through and through, and my kids see that every single day. Mm-hmm. Playing a little bit of a game that my son, who's 5, his name's Cohen, that he plays with me. He's at that age where he constantly asks why. Mm-hmm. A great and easy way to role model is to flip that back on him. Why do you think that? Why are you doing that? And force that sort of almost academic thinking at an yep. early age so that yep. he really starts to connect the dots between his thoughts and his actions. Mm-hmm. And I want to role model that in all of my children. Mm-hmm. First of all, I let them be as wild and free-spirited as they want within a safe and confined space. I really want them to express themselves without thinking twice.
Yeah.
I want them to get as much experience, exposure in the world so that they can diversify their mindset and their connections with like who they want to be, and most importantly, who they don't want to be. Yeah. And the sooner that they can do that, the better, because life is hard and time and our health are our greatest currencies. So don't take them for granted.
Yep.
And I want to create a safe environment where they can truly explore. And if I do that, I think that's the right imprint that I want to leave on them.
I love that. I think your three little ones are really sound like they're really fortunate and lucky to have both you and your husband, your partner in life. So this is really exciting. I do actually have one more thing.
Bring it on.
That just came into my mind, and I go, oh, I need to ask Abigail about yeah. this. Comes back to Iowa.
Yes.
Caitlin Clark.
I'm here for it. Let's go.
What do you think from a leadership perspective? Or would you say she's bold with her vision, right? And she doesn't compromise on care?
I would say that the stats speak for themselves. Not only is she the leading scorer, she leads and assists. That's the ultimate leadership. She sets other people up to win when she's having a down day, and is emblematic of a special kind of leadership that I haven't seen at that age with that level of pressure in a long time. And I find it incredibly impressive.
I didn't realize she led and assists as well.
That's the most impressive part.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. By the way, I'm a big Wayne Gretzky fan from my childhood days. Wayne Gretzky has more assists. If you add up his assists, took away all his goals, he had more points than anybody who's ever scored in the any point, total points with anybody in the NHL. The assist is basically the point, is it's just as important, if not more important, than the goal itself.
I should have mentioned this earlier, but you know, I grew up playing really competitive sports, and soccer mostly, okay. mm-hmm. but it taught me a lot about leadership, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. Working through injuries, how to show up as one team, how to win as one, and, you know, contribute in different ways from a young age. It absolutely helped shape and mold something that I probably couldn't have manufactured on my own through just life experience. Mm-hmm. So it really shortcut that for me. I love watching anyone, it just happens to be a woman, but anyone who has brought energy, empowerment, and enthusiasm to not only their sport, but their state, to the specific levels that she's been able to go deep on. And she does it in such an authentic way. It's really awesome to watch.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. By the way, Ted Lasso?
Yes. I mean, come on. I can talk about it. How much this guy wants us to be done, but I'm here for this. I'm ready to go. So also my husband is from Barcelona. So like we're, and I played soccer competitively. So we're both diehard, as he would say, football or soccer fans.
Yep.
And then like that show came on top and it finally brought our worlds together. It was the first time, like from a media standpoint, that we connected on something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it improved my relationship because it was like our love language. That
totally.
Show.
I yeah. could see that. I get that. Okay, hold on. So we're just going to just riff one more on yeah. this one. We're going to go, okay, we went Ted Lasso. We're both like, yes.
Yes.
Ryan Reynolds. What's
Blake Lively? Where are we heading?
No.
Oh, Wrexham.
Wrexham.
Yes, I'm here for that too.
Did you watch that series?
Yes, I did.
I haven't watched it all, but I want to watch it.
It's hard to not be a fan.
Yeah. And that's pretty incredible business story too.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
That's the vision, the bold vision, yeah. and then never compromising on care.
And
my impression of that business case is that they believed enough and it transferred to the town, which transferred to the community, which transferred to the team's success.
I'm sorry, that's drop the mic moment right there. That is the drop the mic moment.
Do I get like a royalty from them? I mean, that dude has too much money anyway.
Yeah.